He's a British lord and a convicted felon. Lord Conrad Black was once one of the most powerful men in the publishing business. He bought London's Daily Telegraph newspaper in 1985 and eventually owned hundreds of newspapers throughout the U.S. and Canada. But beware the fate of the global media mogul. Look at the tale of Rupert Murdoch unfolding in the wake of that phone hacking scandal. Black's fall came in 2007, when a U.S. circuit court convicted him on fraud and obstruction of justice. But Black did not go gently. He was released last year midway through his 6.5-year sentence after an appeals court dropped 2 charges against him. But then in June, a Chicago court upheld 2 other charges and ordered Black to return to the Coleman Federal Correction Complex in Florida for 13 months. He returned to that prison yesterday. His new book, A Matter of Principle, is a chronicle of decline and fall and his bitter fight back against the U.S. government. Conrad Black did not speak gently of the U.S. government when he was in the studio with us a few days ago, or his notion of principle.
Well, the principle is not to yield even to the overwhelming force of the U.S. justice system when it throws a huge number of charges, completely spurious. It exploits the plea bargain system to roll people over and give inculpatory perjury with an immunity from perjury, and poisons the jury pool with a 15-month-long smear job in the media, and exploits the advantages it has, in particular its ability to, on again, completely false affidavits, freeze the money and resources that are being assembled to conduct your defense. So the principle is to just fight on. The correlation of forces between the U.S. government and Conrad Black was rather unfavorable, but I won 99% of the case.
Bitter, not bitter.
Oh, as an overall attitude, not bitter. Well, your life goes on and you just fight on. More rage against certain individuals than others, and if you mean in national terms, since I'm not a U.S. citizen, it has affected my affection for the country, but I'm certainly not of the mind that it has ceased to be a great country just because it persecuted me half to death. On the other hand, there are 47 million people with a record in this country, and you've got 6 to 14 times as many incarcerated people per capita as any other advanced prosperous democracy like Japan, France, Canada, Britain, Germany, Australia. And a thoughtful American would want to look at this.
A fall from a beautifully appointed one of many homes with the leather-bound book collection to a prison, a federal prison. That's quite a contrast of scenes that we're taken through in this book. How's prison working out for you, Conrad Black?
Surprisingly well. I found the work there very interesting. You know,
What work?
Well, I was a tutor. I was tutoring people to help get people through to matriculation of secondary school.
So you're a little like Shawshank Redemption there. You're doing the legal work, the accounting, maybe some of the advice.
I didn't have much contact with the warden.
I see.
My job was to tutor people and help them graduate. And I got all my lads through, over 100 of them. And some of them really weren't terribly literate when we started. So I liked that work. And then since you couldn't get a drink and the cuisine was something less than delectable, I managed to lose some weight, and you just make the most of it. But I never accepted that I had turned in a comfortable living for being a prisoner on any long-term basis, nor have I.
Again, Conrad Black is on the way back here, the message from this book. Let me play for you an interview that you did with the BBC some years ago where you allude to something that I wonder has maybe come home to roost in a sense. Listen.
The lot of a newspaper owner in London is a notoriously agreeable one, and indeed we are treated, I think, with probably more deference than we deserve as a group. There is also a tremendous interest by the media in the media in a way that tends to make personalities out of the newspaper chairman, whether on their merits they deserve it or not.
Did you step into that more deference than we deserve role and, in a sense, is that part of your undoing here?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the first part is yes, because I felt on the basis of my casual observations of famous British newspaper owners of the past, like Lord Northcliffe and Lord Rothermere and Lord Beaverbrook, that there was a certain style to it. Now, I certainly didn't aspire to the full trappings that those men engaged in. I didn't get into racehorses and all that kind of thing, but there is a certain way that those people traditionally have done things. They go to the House of Lords, they make their views known and so forth. Well, I felt, and I think I could defend this, that I was a very successful publisher of the Daily Telegraph. I was derelict when we got it. We brought it to high profitability, vastly improved quality, essentially replaced the Times as the paper of record, and we're the greatest broadsheet newspaper in all Europe. Circulation over a million a day. So I was not just conducting any sort of a sort of promenade, putting myself out as some sort of a personality. I was just actually trying to do my job. But on the other hand, I saw that it was an industry in decline, and I was heading for an exit strategy. And we were winding down our newspaper business country by country very profitably until this blitzkrieg assault of your Justice Department came down on us.
Well, thinking about the phone hacking scandal of Rupert Murdoch and the troubles that you've had and that you write about in this book, and other press lords and media lords, has the moment of the mogul really passed, and that your life is in a sense part of that narrative?
No, I don't. The era of the mogul in that sense has evolved, I would say, more than passed. But, you know, Maxwell Murdoch and I are not three products of the same cookie cutter.
No.
I mean, I rather liked Maxwell, but he was a scoundrel. I mean, he was an absolute scoundrel. And it's not too suave, John, just to lift hundreds of millions out of your employee's pension plan and breezily say, well, I'll put it back later. It's just, you know, he knew perfectly well he shouldn't have been doing that. Murdoch's a different thing. He, in general, I don't think would break the law, and I wouldn't accuse him of breaking it on this occasion. But he's a complete cynic, and his country and his nationality and his whole concept of collective loyalty is tied up in this company that he's built, and he essentially thinks it has a right to do almost anything. I don't mean anything violent. It wouldn't do that.
No.
But go where it wants, gets the news it wants, and where necessary, fabricates the news it wants.
You know, in your book, A Matter of Principle, there are many, many scenes where you are with the very rich, the very famous, the very influential, the Henry Kissingers of the world, the Barbara Walters of the world, and in some instances, even the Chris Matthewses of the world, who give you support at times that you seem sincerely grateful mm-hmm. for in the course of your narrative here. If you were to have a party coming out of prison and invited all of them, would they come?
Those three, I believe, would, yes. Yeah.
Kissinger, Walters, and Matthews?
I see Kissinger every week here. We've had a great rapprochement. It's like olden times.
Who do you think wouldn't come?
Look, I may be wrong, but apart from a few people that absolutely double-crossed me, apart from those people, I don't think anyone had any great grievance against me.
And he's still here. Conrad Black, former owner of the Hollinger International Publishing Group, columnist and author of his forthcoming memoir, A Matter of Principle. Conrad Black, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, John.
Lord Conrad Black returned to federal prison yesterday. He spoke with us a few weeks ago. And the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago declined to comment in response to Black's statements.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.